All right, welcome to this Brighteon.com special interview. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon, and today I'm joined by two very special guests in studio. Michael Yan, you all know. He's, of course, an internationally recognized war correspondent, and he's been doing a lot of traveling. Welcome, Michael. It's great to have you in studio again.
Thank you, Mike. And it's great to come back on. We just were here a couple of days ago.
I know. But you always have new things going on. And now we're joined by Dr. Pete Chambers, just returning from East Ohio.
Correct.
Welcome.
Yeah, good to be here. We met on a set, I believe, on Alex Jones, and now we're here.
That's exactly right. And you are the one who actually piqued my interest in having the kind of dog that I now have right here. So I have to thank you for that.
He's an awesome dog. I checked him out.
Okay, thank you.
Good dog.
So let's start with your trip to East Palestine.
Well, let me tell you, this is becoming a Paul Revere moment, is what I call it. Because, you know, information back in those days traveled by horse. And I saw it happen again. And this is an interesting story. I started off working with Jim Gale, Food Forest Abundance. They do some soil reclamation. And when we heard that this was possibly going to be a need for that later on, he said, why don't you go up there and check this out? And I did, right? But I'm a Green Beret, or I used to be, like Michael. And we don't trust everything that we see or hear until we see it or hear it.
Right.
Right? And so what I did was an assessment of the center of gravity. And the center of gravity, a lot of people think, is industry or government or finance. Center of gravity is people. People are the most important thing in any environment, unconventional or not. And so talk to the people, you'll find out the truth. And that's what we did.
Wow. Okay. So, and you told me previously that you went right there, very close to ground zero, but not downwind from it.
Not there.
Which I think is really smart, by the way. But you talked to a lot of people, Amish farmers and so on. What was the overall sense of what you got from people right now? And you just returned, what, yesterday? What was the overall sense?
Overall sense is on the ground is confusion and chaos. And we know that in chaos, the only way to control it, I believe, is to control the controllables, the things that are true, the things that we know. We make a spectrum of the most likely course of action all the way to the most dangerous. And then I make an analysis. Now, I made an analysis when I was on the ground, and it went to some important people who showed up there shortly thereafter.
Yes.
And we can talk about that if you wish. But I'll just tell you that the sentiment on the ground was, we live here in this valley. They're trying to push us out of this valley, they being the globalists. They understand that. They know the resources, the food abundance, the ground, the energy that comes out of that region in the Ohio River Valley. We're talking about the second shale deposit in the lower 48. The original history of oil came from the Pennsylvania region all the way down through there.
Wow.
So these things, as people that are shareholders and stakeholders in this, all the way down to the people that don't have news reports, the Amish, who have little farms and little things that they just want to keep their communities alive. I heard from all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the most important thing. Then from that was able to make an assessment, which is raw data of things that I can prove and things that require a deeper dive.
Right. Okay. So let's jump into that question first. Mm-hmm. I want to bring Michael in on some thoughts as well. So big picture, there are, as I understand it, sort of two theories being talked about, at least in alternative media.
Mm-hmm.
Theory number one is that there was vinyl chloride on the trains.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, theory two is that it wasn't that, which we'll get to.
Right.
So theory one is vinyl chloride on the trains. They ignited it. They formed even more toxic compounds, which I've been talking about, dioxins.
Mm-hmm.
But since we don't have any lab tests yet, we can't prove that yet. Although in a few months, we'll be able to check yes or no on that.
Right.
But that theory is that they're covering up a massive toxic event and trying to keep people in the dark. Theory two is that they actually set fire to some harmless substance, relatively harmless, like diesel fuel or whatever, and they're trying to scare people to move out of the valley and take their land.
Right.
Is that a pretty accurate assessment of kind of the two main theories that people are considering right now?
Based upon four reports of what I saw was the bill of lading, if you will, either from the EPA or to other sources that I don't necessarily distrust, but I saw two-thirds of that were leaning, or three-quarters of that leaning towards the vinyl chloride side. Then I saw the polyvinyl chloride side. But I don't want us to get caught up in is, what do we think it was? Let's get into the testing, of which we relied upon the EPA to do.
Which,
and they came back and said on the 10th, oh, there's nothing to worry about. And that was, it was the third, the accident, 3 days later, we have the uncontrolled release, because it's not a controlled release.
I agree with uncontrolled you. Yes, I've said the same thing.
Things are out of control,
uncontrolled
boss.
Release.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I don't believe that's necessary. You're going to have somebody on that's going to tell us about that too, which will be interesting to see his point of view.
Yeah.
And you've talked about it with him before. So then you have this uncontrolled release, and then you have what I see as the fear tactics, the public terror. This is a term that I heard from somebody that lived there. They're trying to create fear in us, and we're not leaving. This is where I grew up. And tactical level or strategic, these theories are holding true.
Okay, but on the other side of that, it seems like they're trying to tell people everything's okay and there's nothing to fear. Because that's what the media is doing and the Transportation Secretary and Biden and everybody. So why are people feeling the terror if the media is telling them there's nothing to be afraid of? Are they getting it from word of mouth or what?
So word of mouth is important there, but understand that the people that live there, I'll just give you an example. This is just fact, and we can make an assessment of it. The first meeting I went to was stakeholders, which was, because it just happened that way, not of importance. So anybody from about a $200 million mid-level oil company of a gentleman that's 77 years old, who's been there multiple generations, developing resources, energy resources for the nation, but also locally, in the form of natural gas to schools, to municipalities. And he can't do that because it costs him more to pull it out of the ground. Now that's a situation, but his situation is such that the EPA over the last year has taken 1/4 of his wells based upon these wells are no good, we're shutting them down. You sell them pennies on the dollar, then there are federal grants out there that are given to large corporations to come in and take these wells.
Wait, the EPA is citing what? Some kind of contamination?
So my understanding, and I'm not an expert in this, but I do know the experts, is there are things called injection wells. And they use heavier water, not heavy water, not deuterium, but heavy water, brackish, brinish,
which is
pumped into the layers, okay, into the layers down below. So as we drill through these layers, we find these water areas, and it's called the engine zone. And the engine zone is where the water travels underneath, and it goes back and forth and moves with the shale. Or it moves with the plates, if you will. When they drill through that, they know they're there. They do the old school, slower, methodic drilling. They're old school guys, and they're expert at this stuff.
Yeah.
And what they're saying is this water is coming up in our fields next to our sites where we're pumping, and the EPA comes and says, there's a water field right there. You need to shut this down. All right? This is what's happening. That's just one example of it. I got five different examples of ways to shut down a well.
Okay, let's bring in Michael Yan on this. First of all, you've been all over the world. You've visited over 90 countries, at least as of last count. You're probably adding another one every week, I think. But you've seen this kind of dynamic in many parts of the world. What kind of pattern are you noticing that might be happening in Ohio?
Very interesting patterns. After we leave, actually, Doc and I are going to go to Florida to research some other food issues and meet with some folks. And then I'm flying to Netherlands to go back with the farmers and to go back on with Jordan Peterson, actually. We did a show on this last year on Jordan Peterson, Jordan and I, and then he came over to Netherlands and I took him to a farm and that sort of thing. The farms in Netherlands are being stolen by the Dutch government, right?
Right, right.
Which is completely captured by WEF, which is co-sanguinated with CCP. You can't talk about, in the years past, I would talk about the World Economic Forum and CCP as if they were separate and in collusion. But it's clear that they're Siamese twins. They're inseparable. And they are, bit by bit, stealing the farms from Germans in Germany, Belgians, from the people in the United Kingdom, Canadians, Americans, bit by bit, stealing our farms.
So do you think that what's happening in Ohio may be a farm grab in some way? Is that what you're pointing at?
I don't know.
Yeah.
My mind is open to anything. One of the things, when you're researching, you have to keep your mind open and not...
Agreed.
Because as you know, once you target fixate, you'll find the evidence that supports your theory. Obviously, there is a lot of sabotage going on. We can see that.
Yes.
But signal to noise, was this actual sabotage? There are a lot of suspicious circumstances around it, but we don't have any proof at this point.
Well, did you see, and also, Doc, the NTSB did release a preliminary report earlier today. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at that, but it said that this report claimed that the rail side detector that detects the hot box status of the truck underneath the train. But that system did work now, according to the NTSB, which is new information.
So they've changed.
They've changed the story. I mean, I was told earlier that it didn't work. They say it did work, and they say that the operators, or I don't know what they're called, the engineers at on the lead train there, the locomotive, that they then attempted to brake the train. And as they attempted to apply brakes, that it went into an auto emergency brake status, which caused the derailment. Because you can't slow down that quickly, apparently. So, and this is a preliminary report from the NTSB, but that's different from what I've heard so far. You'd think that the train companies know how to stop trains mm-hmm. without wrecking them. Right.
You'd think that. Well, this goes into what we were talking about in the hall while we were waiting. In our world, Green Beret world, special operations, we are trained to conduct sabotage. Now, if I look at 120 cars, which is what it was, and there were 11 or so that were derailed, and five of which had toxic chemicals on them, theoretically, we don't know, but right. it looks like something, you know, was burnt, an uncontrolled burn, then if that's the case, that story would lead more towards the sabotage side of the house.
Uh-huh.
Because I can develop it right when I want it to be the most toxic in the center of town.
Exactly.
I mean, it's just, if I'm doing what we call the Carver matrix, you can look it up online, C-A-R-V-E-R, criticality, accessibility, recuperability, vulnerability, all these things that we look at and we say, that's a good target and this is how we'll do it. Okay, that's the Carver. Look it up, it's online. And that right there says, to me, that reads sabotage.
What do you think, Michael, is, and I know you haven't drawn final conclusions, and I'm with you on that. I'm still searching for answers too. Mm-hmm. But if this were sabotage, who has the motive to do this?
Who had the motive to destroy Nord Stream 1 and 2?
Well, we know that. I mean, the U.S. State Department had that motive.
Which is obviously captured as well.
Yes.
Right? I mean, we can see the dog kings that we have. Biden, Harris.
I like that term.
It's an old term that goes back centuries. Should I talk about dog kings for a moment?
Go ahead and explain that to people because I think it's very apt to what we're seeing.
Okay, dog king is an old term that comes from centuries ago. It's been used in Swedish have used it, Norwegians and others, and it's a technique of demoralization that's been used in places like Ethiopia and, centuries ago. And basically what you do is you install somebody, or for instance, let's say the Swedes kill a Norwegian king. They'll take a literal dog, make a crown for it and the necklaces and all that, and have a throne for it, and the dog is now your king. You'll take orders from the dog. So this demoralizes the people who are taking orders from a dog, and it also, the people who, your potential enemies who see this, these are a weakened people. They won't even stand up to a dog. Right?
And so you're saying that Biden and Harris being put into this position is actually sending a message that America has been taken over and is weak and vulnerable.
And we are, because we have no border. Yeah. We're in Texas. We have no border. And who has really stood up to the border, right? Who has really taken Fetterman out? I don't mean out like kill, but I mean who has really said, no, you just can't go to your office. You know, you are brain dead. The female behind you is from China. You know, a lot of people don't realize that. He is a dog king. He's a meat puppet, right? So this demoralization technique, Caligula's horse, for instance, Caligula apparently talked about making his horse into a senator, whether that actually happened or not, to demoralize the Senate, right, in Rome. Or the King Rama X of Thailand now has made his poodle Fufu, well, poodle has now passed away, Fufu, a vice air marshal in the Royal Thai Air Force. He had a spat with the Air Force. He made his poodle into a senior Air Force
right?
officer. Right.
Wow.
So this is a literal dog king, right? And it's very effective.
So then as part of how the people are treated under this dog king type of insult, this seems to match with the fact that there's so much sabotage taking place within our domestic system. So we have food infrastructure mm-hmm. sabotage, energy sabotage. We've had refineries blow up. We had the whole natural gas export facility, I think, in the Gulf Coast is only back online after it was blown up like a year ago. The Philadelphia refinery blew up and got shut down. I mean, there's a lot of things catching on fire all of a sudden. Yeah. What do you say?
Every day. I mean, every day we see something, two, three things around the world, but we see a lot.
Today in Mexico,
here.
I just showed it to you
today
in the green
Mexico.
Room.
Right.
What's burning up there?
An oil facility.
Really? So somebody's going around setting things on fire. It's a sabotage operation.
This is war.
It's pretty suspicious.
We're at war. We are at war.
And you guys both have had training in how to carry this out as part of the military.
Right.
For intended targets, so you know how.
And we both spent
done.
Years in wars as well. Right. I mean, and so one of the things, let's say you're in the Iraq war as an example, there's always the level X of criminality, the level X of somebody just murdering somebody, that sort of thing for whatever reason. But at some point, you're way above level X. You can't sort out everything that happens in a war. Was this actually in the service of the war? Mm-hmm. Were they really just burning this house down because he didn't like his neighbor? Or, you know, that sort of thing. But it's clear. So, you know, when you're talking in the scientific realm, you obviously need to follow the evidence as dispassionately as possible. But when you get in war, there's another king of judgment, and that's intuition. That's gut instinct.
Right.
Because you have to be a fighter pilot. You have to be inside the OODA loop of your enemy. You have to be making judgment calls, which may or may not be right. But you don't have time. You don't have the luxury of spending 10 or 12 years figuring things out.
Well, that's exactly right. And that's why I've been sounding the alarm about the possibility of these dioxins. Because if these exist, then people need to pull back until we get the testing done. Mm-hmm. Because ongoing exposure can be fatal. But if we find out that's not the case, then we know. But let me ask you, Michael. There was an individual 1.4 miles from ground zero of this event. This was reported pretty widely. I think Western Journal covered it. He found ash had fallen on his house and yard, and he found an undetonated blasting cap. And he called the government, and he called the EPA. They told him everything's fine. This is not related to the train incident. And then they sent two teams of scientists to come gather the ash, or some samples of the ash. So, I mean, number one, it's weird to find a blasting cap in your yard that's not detonated, mm-hmm. number one. Like, that's weird. And then secondly, EPA tells you everything's fine, but can we send scientists to come collect samples? What do you make of that?
Is there a photo of that blasting cap that's been, did he photograph it? Or?
I didn't see a photo in the story, but the story is it's a real story for sure. It's got the guy's name in it and everything. Western Journal does a lot of fact checking.
If I didn't commit to go to Netherlands to go on with Jordan, I would be in Ohio right now. This is really important.
Yeah. Well, what are your thoughts?
Those are pieces of evidence. And just like the flag that I took out of a lady's yard there near about, she was about 150 miles away, but enough ash to be deposited on her flag and to bring it back and actually get it investigated. Because these are important pieces of evidence, and all evidence then leads to a conclusion, or not a conclusion, a theory,
right.
And then the theory gets proved or disproved,
right.
And we have a conclusion. It's chain of custody thing. That's why it's got to be done correctly. And so until all of that, that blasting cap is a piece of evidence.
Yes, but why, you know, would a blasting cap normally be used in this kind of, I guess we can ask Don. He's
it could have
come
been a squib
later.
Or something as well. He might not know the difference between a blasting cap and something else. I don't
That's
know. That's
possible.
I'd love to see
if I were to do
it.
This and I was to put something on the train itself to create a wheel to fall off and create a fire, I could do that with a blasting cap to the charge, whatever charge I put under there, be it C4 or whatever, a cutting charge of some sort.
But what Don tells us, mm-hmm. and I think this is confirmed in the media, is that they took the liquid out of the train cars. You have to drill holes in the side of the train cars. The liquid comes out and it goes into the ditch, and then they ignited the ditch. You don't need a blast. You don't need C4 to set fire in a ditch, right?
Not for that part.
It could have been a squib, which are used to set fires.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's sort of like a blasting cap that just makes sparks.
I see.
That's why we'd have to see it.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll look.
So when you said ashes and blasting cap, I was thinking squib possibly.
I see.
I'd like to see a photo.
Yeah, and now you saw in the areas where you visited, did you see much in the way of particulate matter anywhere?
By the time I reached the location, no, because they had they had a pretty good rain, and then a winter storm came across.
So I see.
Snow, ice, melt. Then I'm showing up in the middle of that storm and starting out from the outside working in. Did get into some of the fallout area, but it was after all these rains.
I see.
I stayed away from ground zero. I didn't need to be at ground zero. There are other people doing that. People that are certified in collecting this information.
Right.
My thing is to find out ground truth from the people on the ground. which were some of these things we're talking about, the right. energy, the food, especially for the people of that valley. Amish are a large community, and they're going to be honest. I'll tell you that much.
Yes,
the Amish. And they didn't even know what it was. And Michael said, you got to tell this story. So I'm in this house meeting with the deacon. So he's the leader of the group. And I'll do my best Amish.
Leader of the Amish group.
Of the Amish group, yeah. And he says, and I say, hey, and we said, the day of the cloud, what was the cloud? And I said, well, the cloud was a train that was derailed, and there was a chemical, and they did an uncontrolled release or a release, however you look at it. And that was your cloud. Oh, and I said, have you lost any animals? Tell me anything, because you're right here. You're 50 miles from this thing. Well, no, we did lose a sheep, but that was a couple months ago. I'm like, no, not that sheep. And he says, holy buckets. The cloud is with chemicals? I'm like, it could be. I don't want to scare you, but you live pretty close. We need to be careful. You know, did you see any other ash? A little bit of particulate? Yes, on our buggies. They don't have cars, right? Okay, but these people have no way to communicate. So go away from there and to the next level. When more people showed up, more Amish, I was there for 2 hours with this wonderful people. And then we started talking about Amos Miller. Well, he's in the news. He's an Amish guy. Last year, a SWAT team came down on his place. Took
over meat production.
Yeah. That particular house I was in was shut down by the health department for selling fresh milk to their neighbors. Okay, so right. they couldn't do that. So you see, there's policies that exist. Now, it took Amos Miller 2 years to get exonerated from that, and he has been since December of this last year.
But what we know, though, that the EPA has a long history of covering up these chemicals.
A lot of things, right.
And so they'll conduct testing of what they want to test, and they'll say, we didn't find anything. And also, I know, as someone who runs a food contamination science lab, you know, we have 6 mass spec instruments. I know that if somebody wanted to deliberately find nothing, it's very easy. You can just move the ionization nozzle off axis, and suddenly your sensitivity goes, it's gone, and you don't find anything. There's all kinds of ways that they could cheat on this if they mm-hmm. wanted to. And the thing is, they have a history of being so dishonest. That's why we can't trust them. But it doesn't mean we know for sure what's there. It just means we have a big question mark.
Right. And so the big picture that I was trying to develop was not necessarily about milk and cattle at the tactical level, but the bigger picture of the stories that I was hearing was land grab, or they're going to move us.
Uh-huh.
It fits in with the transfer migration story of human osmotic pressure that Michael talks about,
uh-huh.
and how these people would be moved off to the 15-minute cities. And I've heard that 5 times up there. We're not moving to no 15-minute cities.
Yeah.
We grew up here 5 generations. We're not leaving.
Well, that's a really interesting, yeah, because if it's real, they won't know how poisoned they are
right.
for months or years to come. This is a very slow-acting poison. This is the molecule right here.
Yeah, it's a chronic waster.
It's slow.
Mm-hmm.
You won't know it. It's not like having, you know, radiation poisoning where you start vomiting yeah. within a few hours and your skin starts falling off. Like this stuff, you can think you're fine for months. But on the other hand, if this is faked and they're trying to push people off, right. then you can't blame them for saying, hell no, I'm not going to go. I was born here.
So this would be something in the category of what I was going up there. And it kind of circles back to originally do, which we talk about reclamation of soil. But I look at when I talk about prehab, like training so that you don't get hurt in combat, I look at preclimation, if you will, of not only the soil, but yourself.
Yeah.
If you think, something we used to use in this kind of environment that we only had downrange we could get, which was taking pine needles or cedar needles and making pine needle tea or green tea.
Right.
So that we knew that would affect our cytochrome P450 system in our liver, and it would prevent those things from hitting us. So
yep.
those are things we've got to look at now, is how do we prevent in the meantime until we find out the truth?
Completely agree.
Pack everything up and leave, or do we prehab ourselves?
People can start sprouting alfalfa sprouts right now for pennies, right. and chlorophyll will help eliminate this in a lot of people's bodies. But the thing is, nobody's being told that.
Right.
That's
and
censorship.
And the guys that I'm working with Jim Gale and Pat Miletich, they were great guys on soil stuff. They're saying, look, there are microbiomes that we could look at to go in there and attack that stuff, but we've got to know.
Yeah.
What are we going to use? It's the tool for the trade. What
right.
are we using? So that's
right.
it.
Or you could peel off the top foot of soil and incinerate it,
right.
and which would cost billions of dollars,
right.
but it could be done if you wanted to. I mean, if you can send $110 billion to Ukraine, you can fix the soil in a small town.
And in our business, intelligence drives operations. We've got to have the intelligence, but we've got to be prehabbed or prepped for our bodies, for our soil, for our
right.
animals, for their livelihoods, so that we don't get run off our land. Because look what happened to the folks where I'm from on the Red River, the Native Americans in Indian Territory, which is now Oklahoma as of 1909, move them from their soil lands up to where we want you to live, and then move you out of there and give you casinos.
Well, Michael, this really speaks to the multiple vectors of warfare being waged against us, to the point where even here we are, you know, three highly informed, intelligent, experienced individuals, and we also can't yet navigate what's actually happening because there's such a disinfo war out there, cover-ups and lies, and the government can't be trusted, the media can't be trusted, even we can't figure it out yet. They really control the disinfo war space.
We clearly are in a state of war. That much is clear. And this same across Europe. Again, I spent about 4 months in Europe last year, and then the year before I was in Europe as well. I keep making the circuit, checking things out, walking the line, as it were, checking the perimeter, which is everywhere. I was in Asia, of course, have an office in Thailand. I'll be going to Japan soon. After I end up in Europe, and you'll see the same things happening everywhere. They're doing the same to the farmers in Japan.
Yeah. Well, and is this part of what you see, the WEF, the global trend, which is to get everybody off rural areas and into these 15-minute cities where they can easily corral and control people like cattle? Is that what you think?
They're open about it. For instance, in Netherlands and Germany and Belgium, there's a map of something called Tri-State City. Tri-State City is this giant smart city, control city, let's say a prison, that is mostly in Netherlands, partly in Germany and partly in Belgium. That's why they call it Tri-State. They need that farmland there's about 52,000 farmers in Netherlands, right? And they own about 62% of the land. And a lot of that land is the land that the WEF, the World Economic Forum, and CCP wants to make Tri-State City. Keep in mind, Tri-State City is a perfect place to make a capital of Europe. I mean, that's where the railhead will end, all the way from Shanghai, China, all the way across Asia, across Europe, and to Rotterdam, go right through Tri-State City.
So, well, let me ask you then, Michael, because Putin gave a very important speech a couple of days ago, and we seem to be on the verge of another escalation in the war, perhaps involving then NATO directly in the war. What did the Western European leaders really need to get out of a defeat and a total destruction of Russia? Because that's their goal, obviously.
Russia is actually standing up to the World Economic Forum. And bizarrely, as they ally with China against us, they are also in opposition to China, right? I mean, this is the way the world really is. And Putin and Russia is actually an enemy of the World Economic Forum. And so they're clearly trying to take out Russia. And they're using us to take out Russia.
Right.
And Europe, of course, which is facile.
Well, they're using us, and then we're using Ukraine to try to weaken Russia, you know, sacrificing the Ukrainian men. But then aren't we going to end up in pretty quickly a two-front war where we have to decide, okay, which way do we want to send the munitions, east or west? Because we don't have enough for both.
Yeah. You brought up something important. With a two-front war, we are currently in a position where we're teetering on the inability to conduct that war. Yeah. We've given so many munitions out of our military. National Guard and active duty.
Right.
We're talking about 11155 howitzer shells. We're talking about Carl Gustav's anti-tank rounds. All right, we're talking about a lot of stuff that has been depleted from our inventory. Now we go back a little bit and look at what the COVID-19 thing did to our military and the mistrust of our leaders and the dog king people that they put in those positions.
Right.
In Lloyd Austin and
Darth Vader Austin.
And Millie Darth Vader Austin. Yeah. So we look at that and we go, well, this makes sense. It's a part of this play. And if the whole thing is a pie, the attack is a pie, COVID-19 thing is 10% of it. Really?
Uh-huh. Right.
Now, you're physically hurting soldiers, but you're losing critical thinkers, guys like me that had 39 years that said, you know what, I'm out because I'm not getting anywhere and I can do better being a Paul Revere running the back roads out here as a civilian.
You're being very effective.
Yeah, we have to do that. Yeah. We have to do that because we didn't take an oath that had a completion date on it.
Yeah.
Right? Whether in uniform or not, there's still a constitution and we still have enemies, foreign and domestic.
But what you're both speaking to, and even what we're talking about in Ohio, is what appears to be a deliberate weakening of America, taking out our military strength, both with men and women and munitions, taking out the infrastructure that keeps America alive, food, energy, even education. There's no longer even really education in many places. But then at the same time, just suppressing everybody, keeping everybody down, censorship, right? And then the demoralization that comes with, you know, attacking Christian values, pushing transgenderism, child mutilations, grooming, and saying you have to accept that. You know, I mean, this is, it's clearly a massive war against our minds.
This is unrestricted warfare.
Unrestricted.
Which is an important book to read, by the way. Another important one, I keep mentioning it, is Rape of the Mind from 1954. Mm-hmm. Read Rape of the Mind. It's a very important book. That's a real vaccination against psychological warfare techniques that are used. So as we just plowed through all this death jab campaign and the pandemic and that sort of thing, for those who had studied information warfare, had read books like Rape of the Mind and that sort of thing, you saw the martial art that was being used.
Yes.
Yeah, you would have never fallen for many of these tricks if you knew what they were actually up to.
And this is why I'm so suspicious of what's happening in Ohio, because the same government that tells us it's safe there now also told us that the jab was safe and effective and that masks worked.
I don't even listen to the government. I don't even take them into consideration.
You're right. Yeah. So right. Safe and effective is that term, anytime somebody says that, or sustainability, sustainment models, this stuff, that's world economic stuff.
Yeah.
These are straight up lies. If you hear that, you know, there's a saying in medicine that goes, if you hear a hoofbeat, also in Texas, think of a horse and not a zebra. Well, they've created the horse for us by these lies. And now we know that we hear these words, pay attention to them. We operate in three environments in combat, or in the world for us, in our former life, in Green Suiters. A very open society, happy, everybody's, you know, 1950s America, right? So that's a permissive environment, we call that. Then there's semi-permissive, and that's like being in a country next to Iraq, but you're not in the war. You got to be careful. And there's non-permissive. America, we are in a semi-permissive environment right now.
And it's moving towards non-permissive.
It's moving towards non-permissive by giving your freedoms away, by putting on bands around your wrist in East Palestine saying, here's your biometric band because we're from the government and here we're here to take care of you.
And it seems like we're just one event away from having a total non-permissive environment,
right?
Because of a declaration of a national emergency or a declaration of a state of war with Russia, which right. could happen Monday, man. I mean, we are that close.
I drive everywhere and I literally think, well, am I going to see a cloud on the horizon?
Yeah.
You know, like the Amish said, holy buckets. I mean, I'm not making fun of them. They're honest, good people.
No,
but,
I know.
But honestly, it's just being prepared in that semi-permissive environment that we're in.
Yeah.
You've got to be prepared for the non-permissive as well. And you're doing a great job with that, with your buckets and all this stuff, getting these things out. But your information, these are the Paul Revere's. These are the real white hats, if you will.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, and thanks for mentioning that. I do need to give credit to our store for this segment. Can you show the product camera here? Guys, I think you're familiar with some of these, but you can see on screen, we've got freeze-dried number 10 cans. These are all certified organic and lab-tested. Goji berries, mangoes, blueberries, kale, peas, and then coconut palm sugar here. And folks, if you want to support our efforts and support our studio, check these out, healthrangerstore.com. These number 10 cans are rodent proof. We've all tried to store food in things that mice got into, right? That's happened to all of us. But these are obviously, you know, sealed number 10 cans. They're portable and they're, because they're freeze dried, honestly, a lot of these last over a decade.
Have mice ever gotten into one of those plastic buckets?
Like our Ranger buckets?
Yeah.
No, they've never eaten, not that I know, they've eaten through that thick polyethylene.
Right.
But of course, mice will get through any kind of thin Mylar bags. Like a lot of the preparedness food that's out there is sold in kind of low cost bags.
Right.
And if you don't put it in buckets yourself, by the time you need it, it's just mice turds.
I've never seen them get into MREs. Have you seen that, Doc?
Yes, I have.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah,
they're
a thinner plastic bag.
Yeah, it'll happen.
But it happens.
I mean, they got to know it's in there. But
yeah, I worry. There's other things I worry about with MREs. It's useless calories. But
yeah.
That's a whole other deal.
Yeah.
But MREs is the last stop before cannibalism.
Is that right?
It's like, we got all these, you know, first the pets, you know.
Yeah, right.
And then finally we're down to the MREs.
And then it's that guy's thigh.
Then it's back to Alex Jones, Eat My Neighbor. Right. I love that song.
Famous quote. But you're an expert on famine, you know, and you and I have talked about this quite a bit, and it's no joke because food scarcity can come up on you fast.
Yeah.
Where if you have one failed crop season, like look at Sri Lanka, mm-hmm. look what happened there.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, everything was fine. And then one crop season later, it was total collapse. That can happen in lots of places. And it has happened as you talk about.
Yeah. Michael. And it's all about, again, about conditions, right? It's not about sparks. When the conditions are set, the spark will be there, right? When we see so many things like the Ukraine war, which is obviously affecting world food supply, when we see Nord Stream blown up and the nitrogenous fertilizer plants, the 29 plants around Europe, which are either closed or diminished in output, when we see bottom line is we don't have the resilience that we had even 6 months ago.
Yeah.
Every right. month, our resilience is diminishing. So now when you do get punched, like for instance, if Florida gets hit with a big hurricane, usually, okay, the rest of the everybody throws it and you got people driving all the way from Texas to help Floridians. And then when Texas gets hit, we got people from Oregon coming down, you know?
Right.
And so that resilience, but when everybody's hurting, you're not gonna have that level of resilience anymore.
Right, exactly. And systemic failure of critical infrastructure in a centralized controlled society then has a horrible effect because you don't have the redundancy. And like if we had Amish farms everywhere, small Amish farmers everywhere, yeah, you'd be fine. But because it all goes through, most of the food goes through these processing factories and mechanized agriculture that depends on just a few powerful corporations, mm-hmm. often getting train loads shipped out, trains of grains, and then the trains have problems and they haven't been running right. And then, you know, you have cattle starving in California because they're not getting grain delivered. You know, you start to see systemic failure pretty quickly in a centralized structure.
Very quickly. And in combat, you know, I'll just speak for Iraq and Afghanistan and in Syrian campaigns, the chaos, when it shows up, you are your own 911.
Yeah. Right.
And typically what happens is talk to the people in Hadalat and Rukban, the two camps on the Jordanian border, 70,000 and 60,000 people in each camp. There's not a lot there for them to have when they're walking through the desert.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
And so there's no preparation and therefore there's chaos and there is death along that way.
Yeah.
That comes with death.
And you guys practice what you preach and I do as well. So, and we're going to wrap this up in the next few minutes, but I saw you packing a sidearm earlier.
Absolutely.
I'm packing one. Michael, what you packing two?
Meat hooks, brother.
You're all set? All set with meat hooks?
Well, this is Texas, so we can, and a lot of states have the reciprocity right.
Yeah.
We do exercise.
Yeah. That. Okay. Excellent. And I appreciate we're all kind of Western dressed today, or Texas dress. You got kind of the Southwest poncho going.
I love this thing, man. Everybody wants to steal my poncho.
I know. It's you're going to have to.
I sleep in this thing.
It does.
You're going to have to sell like the Michael Yon poncho.
It has a full stealth mode.
That is so cool.
You know,
it looks like Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah, that's true. Obi-Yon Kenobi, actually. Yeah. And I got the Texas shirt going here.
Always go wool.
Yeah, good point. I want to wish you a safe journey. I know you're headed to Florida. Mm-hmm. And I just want to reiterate, especially to you, Doc, I will make my lab available to anything you find. I'm only in search of the truth as well.
Right.
I'm putting a message out that people need to exercise caution until we know more. I'm trying to sound the alarm because if this is true, it's bad. But I'm also saying let's test. Now, frankly, the EPA should be doing this testing and they refuse to. So where's our government, right? They're not doing the one thing they're supposed to do,
right.
Environmental protection. They don't do that.
But doing this testing can be a dangerous thing.
Yes.
Because of toxicology on the ground, but also the last toxicology team that was on their way there crashed in a plane not too long ago.
So five scientists.
I'm not saying there's anything nefarious there, but I also can't discount nefarious people.
Yeah, well, I'm thanks. Thank you for the warning. I'm very much aware of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we definitely are equipped here in Texas to handle mm-hmm. many different types of kinetic threats. So okay. We'll just leave it at that.
There you go.
Michael, final thoughts before we wrap this up today?
Well, all of our families, our family trees, all of us have been through pandemic, famines, and wars. Everybody's family line here has been through genocides. and we're still here, right?
Yeah.
So it's not like just because bad times are coming, we're all going to die. Obviously, we would all be not here if that were the case.
Yeah, right.
But it's clear that a lot of people are going to die. But you don't have to be those people. People that see it coming, for instance, historically, people that see famine coming, for instance, Kenjiro in Japan in 1833 was, you know, he prepared for it. And there's so many other, I could go on for hours, you know me, when it comes to this stuff. But I mean, if you prepare for it, you see it happening, you can be good to go. You can sail through this storm and get out the other side and say, whoa, that was a pretty heavy storm, but we got out.
Yeah, I have no doubt, folks. I mean, you're looking at obviously three survivors right here, but if you're watching this, you're probably a survivor too. You're going to make it through this. You're going to navigate this. Mm-hmm. This is not a death sentence for everybody. It's really all the things that we're talking about, the gas bombs, the, you know, the energy takedowns, the even the financial collapse that's probably coming, international war. These are going to kill first those who are simply not prepared and not informed. And, you know, kind of the low-hanging fruit that the globalists want to get rid of, frankly. But if you stay informed and you take some basic precautions, you're already ahead of 99% out there, and you can make it through this. You can navigate this. So don't live in fear. Live in knowledge and preparedness.
Live in preparation.
Yep.
Yep.
100%.
Because we can and will make it if we prepare and make our teams, make our networks.
Absolutely.
Networking.
Final thoughts, Doc?
Well, first of all, I want to thank Patient Advocate Bulldog, the guys that helped me out when I was on the ground there primarily, and there's two other groups that didn't want their name out.
Okay.
And then also Jim Gale down from Florida, actually on the Food Forest Abundance thing, because I really want to get him on your show because he teaches people how to do academies to teach themselves how to be exactly what we're talking about, prepared on the food side of the house, right?
Gives you options when things go bad.
Gives you options because otherwise it's going to be Uncle Charlie's leg, and we don't need that.
No.
So, but honestly, just for the audience out there, we don't live in a spirit of fear. We're Americans, by golly, and we're Texans here. And we persevere, but we do it with love. We don't do it out of hate. And we've got to be heads up and just pay attention to people that speak truth.
Yep. Well said. Well, thank you both for being here. It's always an honor to have you on. And I'm going to wish you safety and blessings for your journey to Florida and back. And as you know, you are both welcome here at any time. Just keep me posted.
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you so much, Michael.
Thank you. Let's talk when I get to Netherlands.
Okay. Yeah, let's absolutely do that. Doc, is there any website or social media that you want to give out?
Sure. Yeah, it's drpetechambers.com, but it's drpetechambers.com. It's a repository of lines of effort that I'm working on. I'm a little behind right now because we've been busy, a one-legged man in a butt-kicking contest, but we're going to get back after it, and I'll be able to help people out. They share things with me, and then they're able to go and see what I've been working on to help tell me, hey, this is wrong, this is right. I got no ego.
Okay.
But I got a lot of fight.
Michael, you want to give out your... You're on Telegram and a couple other places. What do you focus on?
But every day I publish on locals.com. So it's Michael Yon on locals.com. My last name is Yon, Yankee Oscar November. And I'm also on Twitter. So it's Michael_Yon. And on Getter, where it's Michael Yon 1776, naturally.
Awesome. Okay, great. All right. Well, thank you, folks, for watching. I hope you enjoyed this conversation. We'll have many more like this now that we have this studio facility up and running here in Central Texas. Of course, I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon.com, and feel free to repost this interview anywhere you'd like and participate in the comments beneath this video on Brighteon.com. Thank you for watching today. God bless you all, and God bless America. Take care.
If you don't want to eat GMOs and pesticides in your storable food, choose organic, lab-tested storable food solutions from the Health Ranger store. We are the only emergency food manufacturer in the world that subjects each of our ingredients to rigorous laboratory testing that covers herbicides, heavy metals, aflatoxins, identity testing, and bacteria tests, including E. coli, salmonella, yeast, and mold. At healthrangerstore.com, you'll find certified organic, lab-tested, freeze-dried fruits, microalgae superfoods, protein powders, and supplements. We offer emergency first aid colloidal silver products made with Texas rainwater, and our Ranger buckets feature an impressive assortment of organic storable food items professionally vacuum sealed in heavy-duty bags that are stacked in rugged buckets for long-term storage. Check out our preparedness foods, supplements, personal care, and emergency first aid products at healthrangerstore.com.